Well, it's very good to be here. It's good to see some visitors that we've met before, and I apologize that I have to ask for your name again and again. I'm bad with names, and sometimes I like to guess, and that leads to a lot of interesting problems. So I usually just ask, because it's a lot better to ask than get some people's name wrong. Some people are a little sensitive about that. I appreciate your patience on as we try to learn your name. When thinking about what we need to talk about, it's really very difficult. And I think I say that every time. But if you have any suggestions, things that you would like to be covered in a lesson, you can let me know. Mike, some of the other men that are preaching, I'm sure, would take suggestions on what to cover. What things do you want us to talk about? One of the things that I was asked about a few months ago is gossip. And everybody goes, yes, that's exactly what I wanted you to cover. No, gossip's not a fun topic. And it's not fun because it too often applies to me. So if y'all get something out of it, this is great. But this is about me, right? And I think that's the way we have to look at something like gossip, because it's real easy to go, well, I'm sure glad so-and-so's here because they need to hear this. Well, maybe they do, but more often than not, we need to hear it also. So, you know, you've heard it been said that the pen is mightier than the sword. Well, in a way, that's true, because thoughts and ideas survive, right, where fear doesn't. In the book of James, chapter 3, we read that the tongue is a small member but boasts of many things. So, James chapter 3, I'm going to read 12 verses. And as we're reading this, think about what it says about our tongue, what we're saying, ideas we're conveying, what kind of things we're doing, how hard is it to always control what we're saying, and how much effort it's going to take to do that. So, James chapter 3, verse 1. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For we all stumble in many ways. And if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body. If we put bits in the mouths of horses so they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder, wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a fire is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature, can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessings and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening, both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water. The admonition against teachers, or the importance of teaching, is when we open our mouths, we're teaching. When we stand in the place of the teacher among a group of people, we have great responsibility. People say that, or when I was wanting to learn to teach Bible classes, they put me in the high school class, right? And I apprenticed, because I wanted to do a good job. So there were two teachers already, so there was a third teacher, me, well, an apprentice, and there were three students, right? So it was a little awkward, but I wanted to learn to teach, and so I wanted to learn to do it right, and so I apprenticed. And so, you know, it's not like, you know, okay, all of a sudden I know how to teach. But they put me in the absolute hardest class that exists in a congregation, the high school class. And I don't know why we do that to men. You know, the easiest class to teach should be the adult class. Why? Because there are people there that will help you. If you say something goofy, they can stop you and say, "Hey, Zane, you didn't mean to say that." And we do misspeak sometimes, or we need better understanding. And so I think men should start teaching in the adult class. And then when they have gotten some understanding and some ability, then they can go teach the younger classes, because, like I said, I think they're the hardest. But it's important to be very careful in what we say and what we do as teachers. But then it comes in verse 2, says that we can stumble in many ways. If we don't stumble in what we say, we're perfect, we're complete. We can mess up a lot of things by opening our mouths, right? And what we say leads to a lot of other things. And the thought is if we control what we say, then we can control our whole body, because that's the hardest part. And the examples of a bit in a horse's mouth, you've seen people who are really good with horses, and it's like it's effortless. They're just telling a horse exactly what to do, right? In Giddings, there were these young girls, and they were like 5 and 7, real cute little girls, big ponytails, and their dad sold horses. So what he would do is he'd put those little girls on those horses who could ride better than anybody ever seen. And those girls would take that horse, run, lay the horse over, come back. And I mean, everybody's like, "Well, see, that little girl can ride it. Of course I can." No, those girls knew what they were doing. But you can see a little bitty person controlling, a 1,000-pound animal by a bit. Or you see the rudder on a ship, again, controlling where it goes. So our mouths, unfortunately, control where we're going. The Giddings Boy Scouts went to Bastrop, and they little campfire, right? And when they left, they covered the campfire with dirt and left. But there was a root of a pine tree that had grown into where they had dug the little pit for their fire, right? 2 days later, hundreds of acres were burned by a smoldering root. And that's what we have to be careful with, is when we're talking, our tongue can be fire. And it can rage out of control. And it can change the entire course of our life and the course of others. So there's a contrast here of blessing God, praising God, and cursing people who are made in the image of God. Can the same mouth spew forth curses and praises? Well, we can do that. But it should not be so. When we talk, we can encourage, we can instruct, we can help, we can do all these good things, but we can also destroy. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words never hurt me. It's actually opposite. We tell that to kids. I don't know why. Words have much more power than sticks and stones. And so what are we doing with our speech? How do we talk about people? How do we use all of this so that we're not just throwing Molotov cocktails that are flaming things and going, "Oh, well, I was just telling the truth." Have your kids ever told you that? Have you ever told you, "Well, it was the truth"? Well, I've had my kids say that, and I've had adults say that. The truth, you shouldn't lie, but is that an excuse to badmouth people? Is it an excuse to be mean? Right? It is true I am bald, right? And that's not a big deal, but you could sit there, what if there's something else about me I don't like? And you sit there and you go, you bring it up all the time, "Well, it's the truth." Well, it's discouraging. So don't hide behind truth. Make sure that our speech is making things better. Now, that doesn't mean, we'll talk about it later, that sometimes we have to say the truth that is hard, but we do it for good things. And so we need to be careful with that. So when we read this in James chapter 3, we need to make sure that our mouth our speech is consistent. The thought of, can a fig tree bear grapes or a grapevine bear figs? Or can you have salt and fresh water coming from the same spring? No, that doesn't make sense physically. But what are we doing when we're talking? What are we accomplishing? And we have to really look at the fruits of what we do. In Colossians chapter 4, verses 5 and 6, it says, conduct yourselves wisely toward outsiders, making the best use of the time. Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person. Gracious. Your speech should be gracious. One way of looking at that is that it shows that our soul is under the influence of Jesus, of the grace that he has. So, if someone, you know, what would Jesus do bracelets? Great idea behind them. Poor implementation because people wore them, right? We should ask ourselves, how would Jesus handle this part? What would Jesus do? What would he want us to do? What would he be proud of? When we're talking to someone and Jesus, we're listening, when we left, would Jesus look to us and go, that was a great thing you did. That was good. It made the world a better place because of the words you used. Or would he look at you and go, I gave you life so you could mess it up like this? So, we should be under the influence or the direction of Jesus. Someone who is motivated by love. Isn't it amazing when two people are in love, how they talk and they all, you know, it's always funny how they're, it's kind and it's forgiving and it's looking at the best, you know? There was a couple and they were explaining the first time they realized they were serious. The guy's explanation was, I looked at her and I'm like, okay, is this going somewhere? Because I think it's going somewhere, but I want to make sure, right? And she heard, he looked at me and he said, I think this could be a great lifelong relationship. Do you agree? Right? They heard two different things, but the thought is that when we're in love, we speak kindly. We speak encouragingly. And we should be not in love, but we should love our fellow Christians. We should love the people in this world and try to help them and speak to them in a loving manner. Or do we use our speech like someone who's mad? Have you ever been around someone who's mad and just can't get over it? They're mad. Say they're mad at Mr. Hand, right, because he's smiling. And they come in and then Mr. Hand says, well, hello, how are you doing? And they look at you and go, did you see what he said to me? And so they answer a very kind thing with something mad. Now, if you're mad at Mr. Hand, you're just wrong. But you shouldn't be. You should talk to him. Or do we speak like someone who is jealous? We all have different talents. We all are made differently. We're all going to do different things in the service of God. But do we look at what someone else is doing and make us mad? Make us jealous? Do we try to pick it apart? We try to bring them down to our level. Do we do that with speech? I've heard that, unfortunately, a lot in congregations. It's something that's very common. Is that, well, somebody's working really hard for the kingdom, and, well, they do it just because they like people to say good things about them. Really? Why can't we assume that they're doing it for good things? Why don't we go and encourage them to continue working? So when we speak, we should be under the influence of a gracious God. And then seasoned with salt. It's got to be beneficial, right? Salt being a very beneficial thing for nutrition, for preserving of meats at the time. Salt was a very, very important commodity. In fact, you know, the Roman soldiers were paid in salt, part of it, to make sure that they would be healthy. When we speak to someone, do we have the preserving quality, the antiseptic quality, the things it takes and helps the person we talk to? That doesn't mean it always has to be deep and insightful, but a kind word How many times have you been in your life where it's just like, I just want someone to be nice to me, you know? Just to really be genuinely happy that they see me. Genuinely happy that I'm there, that I'm trying. Not that I succeeded, but a pat on the back, right? How important is that to us? Well, if you want a pat on the back, start giving out pats on the back. Start being happy to see people. Start helping. And the easiest way and the hardest way to do that is with our tongues, with our speech, with what we say, with how we interact with people. And we have to learn about people. We're going to talk to different people in different ways. Jeremy and John Hand are different men. They need to be talked to in slightly different ways. That doesn't mean they're not Christian men. It doesn't mean they're good people. But we learn about them and we learn what will help them and what we can do to be encouraging to them, because that's our job. In Ephesians 4, verse 29, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouth, but only such as good for building up as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. Whispering about others, talking about others. Well, did you know what Tim said? When it starts out like that, you need to shut it down. If Tim's not going to be the hero of this story, I don't need to hear it. Because if he's not the hero, you should be talking to Tim about it, right? But you venting, if you're, you know, you need to vent. I don't find a scripture that says you can vent. It's not there. You don't get to vent. Why don't, instead of venting, why don't you go solve the problem by going to that person? Why don't you take care of it? Why can't we say good things about people? Bad news travels fast and gossip even faster. But what we should be doing is we should be building up. We can encourage people. We can teach people. We can correct people. We can instruct people. We can warn people. All of those things build them up in their spiritual life. Or we can backbite. We can talk. In 1 Timothy 5:3, this is speaking of what a widow is and what the concerns are. It says, besides that, they learn to be idlers, going about from house to house, not only idlers, but also gossips and busybodies, saying what they should not. Tale-bearing is another way of thinking. We should be busy doing good things, not busybodies. Gossip destroys. The tales that we can carry. Things that we can say. But sometimes we use the words gossip improperly. In 1 Corinthians 1:11, Paul talks about that the household of Chloe has let him know that there's a problem at Corinth. So is Chloe a gossip, or the household of Chloe? What if Tim has had a problem? I don't know how to handle it. So I go to one of the elders and say, okay, this is happening. I don't know what to do. But I wanted you to know that Tim's struggling. How do we help Tim? Is that gossip? Not if my intention is to help Tim. Now, if I do the same thing and I go up to Jimmy and I go, did you hear what Tim did? He's struggling. My motivation's different, right? I'm just telling Jimmy a fun story here that Tim doesn't happen to be the hero of. One, I'm trying to help Tim in his walk with God. Now, we have to be careful with this. We can get advice, but make sure you're going to someone who is spiritually mature, right? That's the first thing. Don't get advice from people who aren't spiritually mature. Okay, that doesn't necessarily mean age, but a 12-year-old's probably not going to be your choice, right? Find someone spiritually mature who is going to help someone be better, to help them out of the struggle that they're in. So, just because you're trying to help, when you're trying to help someone, the motivation determines whether it's gossip or not. And Chloe and them were not guilty of that because from what we see, the goal was to help the people at Corinth and they needed help and it resulted in Paul, someone who was spiritually mature with the knowledge to help Corinth be a better place. So you've probably heard it before. There's this think before you speak. T for true, H for helpful, I for important, N for necessary, and kind. So, if you say enough things in public, you're going to mess up. One time I was preaching about marriage and divorce, and I wanted to say divorce is bad, and I said marriage is bad. I did. Boy, and I said it forcefully, marriage is bad. And was that wrong? Yes, it was wrong. Did I do it publicly? Yes, I did it publicly. I caught myself because Tracy looked at me like I was growing horns out of my head. And I'm like, I don't know what I said, but I'm going to rephrase it. And I think that should actually happen more in congregations. The person up here, including me, can say things that are incorrect completely by accident. And I would really like for, if I do that, for somebody to go, hey, Zane, you want to take another stab at that? So I could go, okay. Because I don't want to be wrong. I don't want to teach what's wrong, but I did. And so you can, if I say something, you need to look at this. Okay, what's true? Right? Don't come to someone with something that's false. Okay, Zane, you said this and the scriptures say this. Okay, it's true. Will it be helpful? Yes. That needed to be corrected because that was something that is wrong. Is it important? Now, let's say I'm getting on a roll and I talk about the number of fighting men in the nation of Israel and I miss it by 1,000, right? And it's really not the point, but I'm just spouting off numbers because I like numbers, right? Is it really important? I'd still want to know, but you don't have to stop the world and go, wait a second, Zane. You know, it's not in that type. Is it necessary? There are just some things that aren't necessary. If you accidentally ignore someone trying to shake your hand, theoretically, you're talking to someone and they try to shake your hand and they walk off and they're like, well, did you see Zane? He didn't even shake my hand. Did he mean to do that? Or was it just something that happened? Is it necessary? And then do it in the kind way that we can. In the kind from the standpoint of the soul of the person you're trying to help. And do it in the most kind way possible. Right? Does that mean that they're going to be happy that you mentioned it? No. Is the first thing that a lot of people say, well, you should have said it better? Yes. But still, we have to do it in the most kind way possible. So true, helpful, important, necessary, kind. And those things we should think about. If we have a problem with each other, don't go to someone else to talk bad about them. Do not call the elders for the purpose of just complaining. If I say something in a sermon that's wrong, or I do something that's incorrect, or I offend you in any way, you and I, please talk about, don't make the elders' life any harder than it has to be. Right? In Matthew 18, verse 15. Matthew 18:15. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. Okay. If we are the Christian family we need to be, we're going to be close enough that we're going to offend one another. Now, this says sin. Offend. We can do it. We can inadvertently not be polite. I don't really consider that a sin. Somebody can make you mad and not sin. If it's not a sin, suck it up. That's the biblical term. If it's not a sin, get over it. And if you can't get over it, go and talk to them anyway. But Matthew 18 does not apply. Definitely don't go talk to someone else because you're being petty. It's not a sin. If it's a sin, go talk to them. There's not an option. This is one of the verses that I go to talk about how old someone should be before they become a Christian. When you become a Christian, you are responsible for all of the instruction that Christ has given, right? Including this. When you become a Christian, it means you are now old enough and mature enough to go talk to the person one-on-one and resolve the issue or try to resolve the issue. If people do this, I think it would be 95%+ effective. You know what's never solved anything? Is complaining to others. Don't complain to the elders. Don't do it. That's better than complaining to the person sitting next to you, but why make their life harder? And it's sinful to just call and complain. There's no other way to look at it. It's sinful. It's gossip. So, when we look at these things, I would like for us to think about the things we hear, and there are a few proverbs I'd like to cover, and then we'll close. In Proverbs 18, verse 17, it says, in Proverbs 18, verse 17, the one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. When someone comes to you to gossip, you get one side of the story, and this says they're going to seem right. There was a man who was preaching, and another person started making accusations, which were incorrect. And these accusations, unfortunately, in the preacher network, which is can be gossip and often is, got to someone else, and they called and said, hey, this person's saying this, but I know that no matter how thin you fry a pancake, there's two sides. Right? Good wisdom. He's from East Texas. Yeah. So, no matter how thin you fry a pancake, there are two sides. So what this verse is saying is, when someone gives you their side of the story, they're gonna seem right. They always are. They're not gonna give you the details that make them look bad. Every time. 100% of the time. It's just the way we work. But then, the truth comes out when the other comes and gives their side of the story. This says examines them, ask them questions. That's the reason we let two people alone handle it. And if not, we bring a couple of witnesses. Right? But we always do it together. When someone, a Christian, accuses another Christian of something, everybody needs to be in the room. So that the truth can be established. It's interesting. That's where our justice system is too. In Proverbs 17:9, whoever covers an offense seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates close friends. This is great amplified in middle school, right? And we don't want to be middle schoolers, but too often we act like it. You know how the middle school works? If you like someone and they do something wrong, you try to smooth it over. But if you carry that tale, now the two best friends hate each other, right? That's what happens in middle school. You know what happens in congregations too. If there's an offense, take care of it. Don't carry that tale around. Don't tell others about it. Don't repeat the matter because you destroy friendships. And then in Proverbs 16:27-29, a worthless man plots evil, and his speech is like a scorching fire. A dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends. A man of violence entices his neighbor and leads him away that is not good. Plots evil. Speech is a scorching fire. Spreads strife. Separates close friends. Entices his neighbor and leads him in a way not good. So what we have to do, what I have to do, is when I'm about to open my mouth, I need to evaluate, what's my goal? Am I trying to make good things happen or bad things happen? What is going to be the result of me opening my mouth? Is it going to separate close friends? Is it going to start a fire? What am I going to do? Is it going to build up? Or is it going to corrupt? Is it going to rust? Is it going to tarnish something that's good? Is Jesus going to be proud to say, yep, he's one of mine? Or is he going to go, what have you done? So when we look at these things, we have the ability to destroy so many beautiful things that God has given us. Congregations die because of gossip. They do. We have elders here, and that's a great guard against that happening, but we need to do our part. So husbands, you need to help your wives with this. Wives, you need to be a good example to your husbands and not join in. Friends have to help friends. And remember, if the person you're talking about is not the hero of the story, maybe you should talk about something else. And I'd like to close in Psalm 141, verse 3. It says, set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. And that's what our prayer should be. So that everything we say can help others. So this hasn't been a very uplifting one. But if we have failed in this, we serve a God that gives second chances, third chances, 152nd chances, 174th chances, right? And so it can be made right. And an apology goes a long, long way. And so let's all draw a line in the sand and say, I'm going to be better with this. And I'm going to help others be better with this by not participating so that we can all be pleasing to God. And we'll come closer together as a congregation if we get the gossip. I'm not saying we got a bad problem with that. I'm just saying it's something that we all struggle with. Everywhere I've ever been, I struggle with it. I think everybody struggles with it. So together we can be a better congregation together if we work against it. So that should be our prayer, to set a God to set a guard over our mouth. If we can help you in your walk with God, we'd like to do that. If you come forward as we stand and sing.